dribs and drabs about alternative media, including this show, in the United States. It's not enough. It's not enough. And this is a brilliant leaflet from the Master Association where it says, nurses say yes on one, safe patient limits. It's got all the stuff I just mentioned. Then a little box here called Mass Live. Report finds Massachusetts hospitals remain profitable. 2017 profits. They list like 10 hospitals with millions, tens of millions. Look at this. Partners Healthcare, $659 million. Trinity Health, $1.3 billion. You know, in Massachusetts, quote, it comes down to a matter of choice as to where these hospital executives want to invest their vast resources. Is it to hoard more profits and expand their corporate empires, or to fulfill their core mission, which is to provide safe patient care? Well, unfortunately, we know the answer to that. They're spending millions, tens of millions, maybe hundreds, on lying ads in the corporate media to convince people to vote no. Shame on you if you vote no on question one. Another thing, nurses say yes on one, safe patient limits. The truth about question one, the January 1st deadline for implementation. The implementation date for complying with patients set forth in question one is January 1st, 2019. Given there will be less than 2 months from the law's passage, what happens if the hospitals can't hire the nurses in time? Will they be fined for complying with that date? This is a common question that the No campaign is doing. But in reality, no fines would be assigned. Nothing would happen to the hospital because the law first requires the Health Policy Commission to draft regulation around compliance and development. There's a whole leaflet about that stuff. Truth versus lie. Another leaflet. Safe patient limits will ensure quality care for hospital patients. Simply put, where there is a safe maximum limit on the number of patients assigned to each nurse at one time, with flexibility based on acuity, patient care improves. Now, did you know, Diego, I think you know this, but a lot of our listeners probably don't, that in California this already exists and it's been around for a long time.
I knew about that.
Yeah. So nurses...
So when they say, oh, it's not impossible, it's oh, go to California.
The biggest country, the biggest economy by
the
state.
The fifth economy
the biggest
in the world.
In the U.S., I think, right? It's bigger than New York, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's the fifth in the world.
Mm-hmm. There you go. And in nurses' independent studies, California's experience and many thousands of people in your communities will support safe patient limits. In fact, anything you hear attacking limits probably came from a hospital executive intent on confusing you. Lie number one, the measure is a rigid, quote, government-mandated staffing ratio, unquote, and would take vital decision-making abilities away from bedside nurses. Truth number one, the question was written by bedside nurses like myself. I've been a nurse for more than 40 years. Voting yes is the safest thing I can do for my patients, my family, and my profession. And they're quoting a Donna Kelly Williams, an RN at Cambridge Hospital, president of the Mass Nurses Association, co-chair committee to ensure safe patient care. The experience of thousands of nurses caring for patients in all types of hospitals without the state motivated nurses to throughout the state. I'm sorry. Let me say it again. The experience of thousands of nurses caring for patients in all types of hospitals throughout the state motivated nurses to develop this law. With safe patient limits in place, we will have more time and greater ability to make decisions about our patients' needs. We also have more time to effectively implement those decisions, to monitor patients and educate them. Safe patient limits are not ratios. They are safe maximum limit on the number of patients assigned to each nurse, depending on hospital unit and patient acuity. Acuity means seriousness, I believe, of their condition. The law empowers bedside nurses by requiring the development of acuity tools for their unit to assist in determining the acuity of their patients and then to enable access to greater resources to meet the changing needs of their patients. So this is, again, from the Mass Nurses Association. Well, these, by the way, the stuff they put out is well sourced, you know, like you can find the references for what they're saying. So this thing has truth number two, truth number three, truth number four, all against these different lies. It's very, very good. How many people would get this and read it? I don't know. Members of Socialist Alternative have been doing our part. We've been getting out, helping with going door to door, helping with signs, door knocker things where you put something on the doorknobs. We've been doing phone banking. We're not big enough to change the, you know, tide if it is going against it. But I really think people should vote yes on number one on this referendum. And then there's a thing from the Commonwealth Magazine, why we support question one, the facts support a vote for nurses' staffing minimums. Let's see. This is an interesting take on it. If you believe in climate change, then voting yes on question one, which addresses patient care, patient safety, and case overload for hospitals, should be obvious. The issues are like in two key ways. First, just as there's a body of knowledge supporting strict limits on carbon production, there's an overwhelming amount of research and data supporting strict limits on the number of patients one nurse should be caring for. Duh. Second, I threw in the duh. Second, the same core strategy is deployed by the healthcare and fossil industries to discount the problem and discredit the evidence supporting the solution, confusing voters by, quote, raising issues and then bombarding the airwaves with lies. Now, we are both academics and practitioners. We have spent our lives in healthcare, this is the Commonwealth Magazine, and education, two economic sectors where decisions are mostly made by men and the hands-on work is mostly done by women whose skill, experience, and intelligence are routinely ignored. We have been leaders in policymaking, negotiating these fields, always using an interest-based approach, etc. Anyways, they go into what they've accomplished, and then they get into the facts. What nurses themselves think about question one should be paramount. You've no doubt seen or heard the industry-funded advertisement which says a nurse is something like I'm a nurse and I am voting for I'm voting no. As we know from the charter school campaign. You mentioned that, Diego, and the old tobacco industry campaign. You can always find someone in the field to say that what the corporate industry leaders need them to say. The nurses union, architect of the ballot question, represents 70% of all hospital bedside nurses in Massachusetts. 70%. Keep that figure in your head while you weigh up some facts against the industry assertions and their coverage in the media. And by the way, they've done even more research, not this Commonwealth Magazine, but the nurses union. Some of the nurses they put up never worked as a bedside nurse. They've been administrators.
Do the hard work.
Yeah, management lying again. They're the little cops, the little management cops for the higher management. Anyway, don't have time to go read this. It's a quite good thing you could get from, again, safepatientlimits, all one word, .org. Check that out. Finally, we had a couple public meetings. We co-endorsed with the Mass Nurse Association, Social Alternative. And just read the blurb really quick from here because we had to condense this. Massachusetts nurses are on the front line of struggle this year as they mobilize for patients and families to fight hospital executives for safe patient limits. Medical costs across the U.S. are ruinously high for workers, yet hospitals are understaffed and our nurses are overworked. Patients are not receiving the care they need to recover safely. In Worcester, for example, and this is where I've been doing political work lately, hospital executives closed Plumlee Village Healthcare Clinic and 13 psychiatric beds at UMass Memorial Hospital, citing insufficient funds. Yet in 2016, the hospital president gave himself a raise of $1.5 million, and the hospital has $160 million in offshore Cayman Island accounts. Our nurses work 60... You should tell your cousin that. Our nurses work 67 hours a week, and every additional patient per nurse increases chances of readmission to the hospital by 7%. Those millions in profits are exploited from our nurses and patients' well-being. That's why we, and this means Socialist Alternative, stand in solidarity with the campaign to vote yes on one for safe patient limits this November. Join nurses and socialists in the movement against corporate health care. And the speaker in Worcester was William Leahy, a registered nurse, been part of the nursing division at Worcester State Vincent Hospital since 1977. He was a really nice guy. I met him. And, I have a vote yes on one sign in my yard. I see some around. I see a lot around in some places, but also in some places I see no signs. And I'm just disgusted by that, to be honest, just really disgusted. Who would vote against saving lives? I mean, if you vote no on this, you're basically putting people's lives in danger. You're empowering these corporations that don't care about people. They care about profits. You know, it's that famous George Carlin quote, they don't give an S about you, they don't give an S about you. He says it three times. Oh, I think he throws in the F word, too. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. Diego brought in some Fugees. We're going to be listening to The Mask. Stay tuned. Oh, it happened to, I put it in the wrong, and there's a little error here, excuse us. So irritating. What do we talk about while I switch?
So I chose some Fugees because of what's happening with the refugee.
We'll talk about that next.
Caravan. I call them refugees.
Let's not forget about that. We're going to talk about that next. The migrant caravans where Trumpolino is calling out the troops. And how many troops? I mean,
15, and they went at 16,000.
How many U.S. troops do you think are into that? Since a lot of them are Latino, by the way. How many?
Yeah, that's not going to fly.
I was never in
the... And he said, if they throw rocks at you, shoot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Rules of engagement, come on.
Yeah. They're already shooting. The Israeli troops are shooting at rock throwers on a daily basis, supported by billions in U.S. money to the Israeli government. A lot of it goes to the army. So we got the Fugees filing queued up here. And we're going to listen to The Mask. Heads up.
Have you ever worn the mask? Yeah. 1 2 1 2.
The S to the K, put the mask on the face just to make it next day. Feds be hawking me, jokers be stalking me. I walk the street and camouflage my identity. My posse in the Brooklyn wear the mask. My crew in the Jersey wear the mask. Pick up kids doing boogie woogie wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, yeah. But how long
yeah. I used to work at Burger King, a king taking orders. Punching my clock, now I'm wanted by the manager. Souping me up, saying,
you're a good worker. How would you like a quarter raise? Move up to the register. Large in charge, but you gotta be a spy. Come back and tell me who's bagging my fries. Getting high on company time.
Hell no, sirree. Wrong MC. Why should I be a spy when you're spying me? And you see what you thought you saw but never seen. You missed the last move. Checkmate, crown me king. Pull my 22 pistol, whip them in his face. Higher, now I'm fired too, but now I'm wired. Eyes pitch red, but the beat bop my head hit the streets for relief. I bumped into feds, I got kidnapped, it took me to D.C. Had me working underground building missiles for World War III.
M to the A, to the S, to the K, put the mask on my face just to make it next day. Brothers be gaming, ladies be claiming. I walk the street and camouflage my identity.
My posse uptown wear the mask. My crew in the Queens wear the mask. Stick up kids with the Tommy Hill wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last? I thought he was the one done, I was stung on by his lips. Taking sips of an amaretto sour with a twist. Shook my hips to the baseline. This joker grabbed my waistline. Put pressure on my spine, trying to get elbow to one. I backed the ball from then I caught him. With 5 fingers to his face, I had to put him in his place. This kid's invaded my space. But then I recognized the smile, but I couldn't place the style. So many fronts in his mouth, I thought he was the golden child. Then it hit me, that's Tariq from off the street around my grand. I haven't seen him since 15 when he got booked for doing scams. I tried to walk away, but he wouldn't let me leave. He ran him quick behind me asking, yo, what happened to my nigga Steve? Steve was like this kid I went with back in grammar school. I chuckle, knucklehead, I seen him yesterday, he's busted. So who you checking for now? Probably some intellectual. I kept the conversation straight, but he kept trying to make it sexual. And his old lady tried to play me, waved her hands up in my face. Yo, I told her check your man, cause bitch, you acting out of place.
M to the A, to the S, to the K, put the mask on me face just to make it next day. Brothers be front, then they be running. I walk the street and camouflage my identity.
My posse in the Bronx wear the mask. My crew on the aisle wear the mask. Stick up kids rolling in the Omni wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last?
3 a.m. in the morning, on the boulevard, I'm still at large, engaged with my entourage. Me and Godfather in the 67 Dodge. I stepped out and looked, then post up my guard, searching for my car that was stolen from Scotland Yard. My first instinct was to check the Chop Shop garage. As I rung the bell, someone tapped me on my back. I turned around and looked, it was a rookie in a mask. He said, I got an itch on my trigger. Don't move, nigga, I'm taking you for murder. See, cops are two faces like two laces on my Reeboks. My knees knock as I step back for a clear shot.
Yo, did you shoot him?
Nah, kid, I didn't have the balls. That's when I realized I'm bumping too much Biggie Smalls.
To the S to the K, put the mask on your face just to make the next day. Runners be beefing, cops be thieving, brothers be scheming, and should be teaming. Jokers be smoking and staying broken. Bitches be teasing and money squeezing. Niggas be creeping, baby mothers be weeping. I walk the street and camouflage my identity.
My posse in the Haiti wear the mask. My crew in Jamaica wear the mask. Stick up kids bumping Fuji La wear the mask.
Yeah, everybody wear the mask, but how long will it last? Said
shit was ill, man. It was ill. Yo, bullets everywhere, guns, smoke. Jokers falling off their porches, just shooting straight cowboys, man. Straight motherfucking cowboys.
And that was the Fugees with
the mask.
The mask, sorry, yeah. And we'll have some more music later. Right now, we're going to get back to on Socialist Alternative Radio, the talk part of talking music. First, we'll do a quick public service announcement, as we must do. And these are in the radio lingo known as PSAs. So isn't that cool?
It's paper.
Well, no, actually, there's PSAs we have lined up here on the machine, but I'm just doing it by paper here because, yeah. Well, I wish I could find this one I like again, but I always...
What about that U.S. healthcare one right here?
I don't like that one too much. Okay. Well, speaking of the... Let's do this one. Why not cover your computer camera? If you have a computer with a webcam and you don't use it, why not cover the camera up with a piece of opaque tape? Opaque means you can't see through it. In addition to government programs, there's plenty of other malware and viruses that can hijack the computer's camera to spy on you. So if you don't use it, consider covering it up. A message in the public interest from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
I've seen somebody at the library has his own, like you said, tape and puts that, because in the library there's a little camera right there.
Yeah.
And he puts it and I go, bravo, you are very informed.
And then we have a really quick public service announcement, autumn outdoor exercise. Because today's a beautiful day, believe it or not, here in New England. We don't have too many of them. Autumn brings some of the most beautiful days of the year to New England. If you haven't been getting all the exercise, you should. Oh, this bothers me. We're going to talk about that in a second. Now is the perfect time to get outside and walk, run, and ride a bike. Use your feet to go places instead of your car. Enjoy the fall colors, breathe the fresh air, reduce stress, and improve your health. A public service message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Community Radio. Now, I like that PSA, but there's that implicit assumption that if we just, that we have the time to exercise. We've talked about that on the show before.
Yep.
Next time a doctor says to you, if you're a worker, working class person, whatever, they say lose weight. Say when? When do I lose weight? They say eat better. Say organic's expensive. You know, when do I lose weight? I'm too busy, working too much, taking care of my kids. I don't have time to exercise, doc.
Yeah, and also stress adds to the weight.
Oh, yeah. So why don't
people,
you...
they don't even get into that. It's not just the food, it's the stress.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've seen people that literally don't eat and still gain any weight, but...
Yeah.
Why? It's a stress.
Why not, doctor, be part of a movement to create a shorter work week with no cut in pay? And then we'll have time to exercise. Why not create community gyms? You know? Like you know, there's a slight, this is very, not a direct analogy, but a slight analogy to YMCAs, YWCAs. They spread across the country to a certain point with their propagandistic mission of spreading Christian mythology. By having, you know, gyms and pools at low cost or no cost for people. And you know, in my life, that's been a big thing, although I know I hate the Y, but it's, I have to admit, like, you know, one of my brothers at least played basketball at the Y. You know, I took swimming lessons, which sucked at the Y. I had to go somewhere else, but they sucked. Then I come here into the big city, bigger city, and the only places a lot of people suggest going swimming is the Y, because it's the only like public pools around almost. I mean, the city has some, but they're very limited and not well kept up and stuff. So anyway, doctors out there, if you're gonna prescribe weight loss, or nurses, then you better see the whole picture. That most working people can't afford gyms and they can't afford the time to exercise. So, and I'm getting robocalled by a solar energy company, and I love solar energy, but I don't like capitalist solar energy. And I keep saying, "Don't call me, I can't afford it." And they keep calling. What am I going to do about that? I'm going to have to take some action, I think.
But ask them anyway, to next time. Can you get me off the list? And that's it.
I did it. Didn't happen. So anyway,
that's like this health thing. You can get it at a discount rate, blah, blah, well-being company, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, yeah. And press 7 if you want to be off the list, and I didn't.
Well, there's hardly any gyms around where I live. I went to one that was a half hour away, Planet Fitness. They were advertising a pretty low rate. But I looked around, and every single machine was taken at a time that it shouldn't have been. So I'm like, oh, I understand this now. You're going for volume. And at least your rates are cheaper than other places.
See, where I go.
They hook you in at a dollar, and then they jack it up. But I understand that. But it was so packed. I was like, I'm going to drive half an hour and then not get to do anything. Forget it.
Yeah. What's the point? You waste your gas money for what?
Yeah. What were you going to say about where you go?
Where I go is $29, close to $30, but it includes some of the fizz, you know, because if you were to go to Planet Fitness, it's only $10, but you don't get the a personal trainer. We're going to have a class on how to do ride a bike or do the treadmill more effectively, but that's included in this one.
Good.
And they have more equipment, so it's not like, oh,
no, that's good.
And there's time limits too. You got to move on to somebody else wants to take that
believe treadmill. It or not, though, I couldn't afford $29 a month at this point, plus initiation fee and all that stuff.
But once I get my health insurance, it's going to kick in. I'm enrolling this month.
Good.
It'll cover half of that.
Good. Good.
So half of the bill will be covered by that.
No, that's
plan.
Good. That's good. So as we promised, the there's a big issue here in the United States right now around the title the Migrant Caravan, and this is a. Well, why don't you introduce it? Go ahead, Diego.
I want to say it's the refugee caravan.
Okay, sure.
It's a crisis in Central America that's been going on for some time, and it's a capitalist crisis. You know, it's El Salvador, Honduras. You know, with this guy that supposedly kicked out the guy that was popularly elected is making a situation, and this is something that was started by this administration. Underneath, you know what I mean? To keep this guy in and to not provide enough jobs for the people, just total greedy, ultra-capitalist imperialism.
You're talking about Honduras.
Honduras.
Yeah.
And also El Salvador. It's been a wreck since, you know, since the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Just to get back to, you know, a historical point of view, where we are up to today.
Goes back further, right? Goes back further. Monroe Doctrine, the whole... U.S. dominance over Central and South America.
We can go back to the 1800s. You know,
goes back to what some Marxists would
call the Spanish War, or was that the war with Spain to kick out Spain? They took over in 98 Cuba and
right. But some Marxists would also put a general process point here. Of you ever hear of Trotsky's book called Permanent Revolution?
Yes.
So one of the main parts of that book is that. And then you can find this in other Marxist works. It's in Capital, in so many words, that
state and revolution.
When the capitalists came into power, as we were kind of talking about earlier, we were talking about history, the history of different economic systems in the world. When the capitalists came to power, it's not like the first countries that became capitalists then said, let's share this with everybody else.
Yeah.
They went instead and colonized and took over everybody else they could in order to exploit cheap labor and natural resources. And that process still happens today. If a country works its way, that work is the wrong term, but, you know, dominates its way onto the, you know, top capitalist countries, which are very few in number compared to the number of countries, in terms of the dominant ones, they then they don't welcome their junior partners into full power. They say, "No, we're the most powerful. We're going to make decisions here, and we'll give you a little money, but that's about it. We're going to control things.
Yeah, you're just my puppet."
So Central America and
so basically,
South America
what
have been
they have in Honduras
two
is a
years.
Puppet of the U.S. That's just, you know, doing its bidding. And that's the situation. It's come to a point where people just feel I need to go, you know, to come in, or at least, well, I heard a lot of Hondurans are trying to get into the U.S. and then go to Canada, because in Canada it's a big deficit of workers. In other words, there's not as, what's the word? In Canada, unlike here, We have more workers, as opposed to in Canada, their generation's dying out, where they need more workers to replace that, you know, the people that are retiring. In other words, there's more retirees than young people replacing.
All over Canada or just certain parts?
Mostly Canada, like Toronto, Quebec. Mm-hmm. I heard a lot of Haitians say, I'm going to Quebec. What's the point of being here? Montreal, Alberta.
Mm-hmm.
you know, places like that. Vancouver is another one.
By the way, getting back to the general thing we're talking about historically under capitalism.
And they're a little more generous in their policy of you can work with us, get the same benefits like a citizen, but you don't have to be a citizen. Mm-hmm. You just renew this visa every 4 years.
Mm-hmm. By the way, getting back to the general process, though, another way this is talked about in Marxism, but also in other analysts, so sociologists, historians, whatever, is the underdevelopment of such and such. So the underdevelopment of Central and South America are directly tied to U.S. imperialism and the U.S. exploitation of those areas and setting up, you know, governments that are at best puppets for the U.S., at worst, they keep them on their toes.
Let's, I mean, just give an example. A particular city in El Salvador would be, okay, agrarian, all of a sudden you got modernization. But what's with that modernization? All of a sudden you have a factory, sweatshop over here, sweatshop over there. Champion?
Champion
is produced in Honduras and El Salvador, Fila, Nike, you know, whatever components back. You know, you see a lot of the sweatshops.
Yep. Mexico as well, yep.
In Mexico. Maquinadoras.
By the way, have you heard anything about AMLO lately?
Who?
AMLO, the Mexican guy that got elected. He's supposedly...
From Moreno?
Yeah, he was a leftist of sorts.
Yep.
Progressive. It comes from a workers' party or formation, not from a capitalist party, not from a corporate party.
Not from the PAN.
So he got elected. Not from PRI, not from PAN. So he got elected, but I haven't... And it could just be U.S. propaganda doesn't... U.S. corporate propaganda doesn't talk about Mexico very much, so that could be it. I just wonder if you had heard anything specifically.
Not much. Not even in Spanish. It's like, Mexico, what is Mexico doing? What I did hear about Mexico taking in a lot of African refugees into what they would say when they say, I need amnesty or I need... asylum,
mm-hmm.
and helping them out. I mean, I've seen a report where they were using the fire department in this particular city in Mexico, helping out my African migrants. So there's other peoples coming in, migrating too, from places like Africa, West Africa, Sierra Leone. Troubled places.
In the corporate media, both in the U.S. and in Europe, there's been over the last couple of years, of course, a ton about migrants from Africa.
And they stay in Mexico. They're actually being incorporated and learning Spanish.
Yeah, coming to Europe. But what I'm trying to say is for people that aren't familiar with U.S. corporate propaganda, what's being focused on a lot right now is this migrant caravan that we started to talk about. Started in Honduras. People wanting to apply for asylum in the United States once they're in the United States, which is supposedly legal, but Trump is saying it's not. Trump administration seems to be breaking the law. And the migrant caravan grows and shrinks in different numbers, but it's in the thousands sometimes and down to maybe 1,000 or something other times or less. And getting help along the way, so it's become a symbolic...
Like a protest march.
Symbolic protest march. Great way to put it. Symbolic protest march.
And I think that was the strategy. We in numbers will be, you know, it'll be a lot harder for them to say stop. You know what I mean?
I agree.
So now you got this reactionary guy in office going, mm-hmm. We need 15,000 troops. It's an invasion.
That would be Trump.
You know?
Well, it's also
invasion.
It reminds me of what's been happening in Israel, Palestine, and
now if Mexico was Switzerland instead of Mexico or Central America, would they let those guys in because they're white? I wonder.
I don't know.
My mother put it very interesting. If they had been Europeans coming in, would they let them in?
Well, there have been times in American history where certain Europeans were not considered white.
Right.
But given right now,
like Staten Island.
If they were educated, so-called, if they had tech, they'd probably let them in, But what I was going to say was the, and I forgot, what was it? The, darn. Well, back to the caravan itself. Symbolic protest. I think somewhat popular. I mean, I've seen pictures of the caravan people. They're like, a lot of them are women and children, so it's going to be hard to whip up, although Trump is certainly trying, be hard to whip up U.S., whip up animosity among the people towards this caravan. maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's people in, you know, Cracker Jack, Arkansas or something that are like foaming at the mouth about some caravan. I don't know.
We got people in Arizona.
I think for a lot of people.
You know, that group, the Minuteman Watchers,
some paramilitaries,
whatever.
Paramilitaries and stuff, yeah.
And they say, there was some report. The guy said, if you're needy guys, it's going to be aggression as soon as they come in. Just shoot at sight. Hmm. Shoot on sight.
Yeah, shooting can go both ways. I mean, but, the analogy I was going to talk about. So, I don't think this started with Hamas, but I think Hamas is supporting this now. But whatever, this mass going to the border in Gaza in mass numbers, I think it's a brilliant strategy. And whenever you can get more and more people involved, the more effective a strategy is going to be. It might not win, but it's the right idea. Same thing with the caravan. You know, why leave it up to like individuals trying to sneak over and stuff? Why not go en masse? Why not go as a big group and force, you know, your rights and interests through that way? It makes perfect sense to me. Whether this is big enough or not is another question, but I mean, socialists, like Trump likes to accuse the Democrats of not wanting borders, you know? Now, that's a goal that'd be hard to achieve under capitalism, because capitalism relies on, probably impossible actually, capitalism relies on the nation state, despite it being international and you hear all this multinational stuff. They rely on the army and the military of nation states to enforce their economic will on the population, indigenous, you know, internal population plus external plus foreign populations. They're not going to give that up. Nationalism is not going to disappear under capitalism, even if there's a severely global economy with huge multinationals, which there is, but even if it gets somehow more so that way, they're not going to give up the nation state. It's a very useful tool for them. And then within the nation state, all the propaganda to obey the flag and be nationalistic and all that creates, you know, the fodder for the army and so on. So that they then use to pursue capitalist interests. So my point here is that the migrant caravan stems from the crisis of capitalism in the region. The capitalists themselves, despite including the Democratic Party capitalists, they're not for open borders at all. Trump is just using, you know, emotive rhetoric to try to get people riled up that he thinks he can rile up. But on the other hand, the Democrats, of course, have no answer for, you know how they talk about the immigration problem or whatever in the Congress and all that. There's no answer under capitalism. There just isn't, you know. I think we have to fight under capitalism for immigrant rights, you know, migrant rights, workers, no matter what country they come from, we're all brothers and sisters, we're all comrades, hopefully, at some point. And fighting for our rights now is really important. Fighting for migrant workers' rights is extremely important, you know? And we should try to get that, you know, put pressure. They're having demonstrations in support of the caravan, you know? That should happen. And caravan makes perfect sense to me. We don't yet call it open borders, though, as socialists, because the consciousness is so not there, unfortunately, that would just be, oh, you're for open borders, forget it. It'll be chaos. Boom, boom, boom. You know, and there's under capitalism, it probably would be, actually. But under a socialist society, democratic social society, you could organize free travel, free going to places to choose new places to live as part of the system. You know, like you're saying, there's a shortage. When there's labor shortages under capitalism, they're kind of surprising. Where did that come from? Now, what do we do?
Or in Canada, you mean?
Or anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, under capitalism, when there's a shortage of labor, it strikes the capitalists as a big surprise. They don't know what to do about it. They don't want to raise wages unless they have to, blah, blah, blah. In a socialist economy, you could plan so you wouldn't have labor shortages, you know. Where the incentives would be under a socialist economy, that's debatable, but hopefully not money anymore, and it would come from, hey, if we build this, we're going to have a better life. If we maintain this, things will go better, you know. So that's what we're asking for. The whole immigration thing is unsolvable under capitalism, because you have the capitalists that want to exploit immigrant labor, and you have at most times competition for jobs, so that whips up anti-immigrant thing, even though it's not fair, does that. And capitalism is not going to change that. They're going to keep exploiting immigrant labor. They love it. But at the same time, they want social stability, and they want to control the situation their own way. And there's people that are out there that are going to be like, you know, used by the capitalists often to stir up anti-immigrant.
And I hate the Democrats.
Anti-immigrant sentiment on one hand, but exploit the immigrants on the other hand. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I hate the Democrats saying, oh, those are more people to exploit, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of what they're
going to look at it that way. They're not looking at it in the sense that let them in, we're being generous, you know? No, they're looking more people exploiting those strawberry fields out in, you know, California, you know.
They also end up agreeing a lot of the restrictions at the end of the day, Democrats. And California's a Democratic Party state usually, you know? Not always, but usually. And they have plenty of horrible immigrant rights laws. I remember when I was in California, I think we talked about this on the show before, you could get into, I don't know what it's like now, but you could get into you could go through a roadblock to identify illegal immigrants like 100 miles into the border, 50 miles into the border, like way far from the border. So how do they know who to pull over? It's pure racial profiling. They pull over dark-skinned people, and the white-skinned people would shoot on by. What kind of system is that? It's based on racism. It's
apartheid.
It's insane.
Almost like an apartheid. Yeah.
And it didn't stop it. The biggest increase in migration, and this is a very important point from Latin America, from Mexico.
You can't stop people that lived there already. It was Mexico at
one point. Was part of the problem. That's what they would say.
It's like, what are you talking about? We were here a long time ago.
If I told you how many letters I read to the editor in California when I was there about saying, hey, my family was here before the Europeans. I just got pulled over in a checkpoint. Such a cop was rude to me. My family's been here longer than your family, you know. I mean, I totally sympathize, but in a way, it doesn't matter. You know, it's a power thing. It's an economic thing now. Anyway, so the point is that, like, what was I going to say? Anyway, we should move on. But so what is the time frame, though? Do you know? Like, when is this caravan supposed to hit, like, the Mexican-American border if it gets that far?
Around this week.
Nice. Good.
Some point this week.
Yeah.
Because they already got the troops lined up in certain areas.
You know, I was never in the Army, but I was in ROTC for a year before I dropped out. And I met Army people then. And, of course, a lot of my family was in the, you know, like I had a brother in Vietnam and the Marines and stuff like that, blah, blah. And I had an uncle who was a drill sergeant in the Army, of all things. He liked to gamble and drink vodka, by the way. Anyway, so... you know, I've been around the military a little bit, and these aren't the kind of people that are going to shoot people that throw stones, most of them. I met one crazy guy, a major in the military, and he would shoot people, but most of the people I met were there for, like, that uncle, you know, when he joined the Army in the Depression, he couldn't find work. He was a hobo. He was going across the country as an 18-year-old.
You're talking about your uncle.
Yeah, going across the country trying to find work, couldn't find work. He was like three other guys. He ends up joining the Army. The only way out of that. Couldn't find work.
It was out of necessity, economic necessity.
My father, factory worker, got drafted in the Army. I have to admit, though, he was anxious to go World War II. And then my brother...
Was he anxious to fight the fascists?
He wasn't political. He was... I don't know what his motivation was. I should have asked him. I think it was nationalistic. I think it was...
He wasn't in the Communist Party.
Not at all.
Oh, okay.
No. He was, unfortunately, right-wing or conservative. He
supported Ike and what's his name?
That's a good question. Probably.
Ike and Nixon.
He supported Barry Goldwater in 1964, which was insane. I still remember. I have a childhood memory of that propaganda around our house. But I don't know, World War II, we talked about stuff afterwards, and he sounded pretty sane about it. But why he was anxious to go, I never questioned. Him and a buddy of his, they went up to Canada. To try to get in the Canadian Air Force.
Serious?
Yeah. And,
wow.
Or whatever. I don't know if the Air Force exists yet, but to get in the Canadian something. I think it was...
Royal Air.
They were interested Canadian. In air stuff. And by the time that...
They wanted to fly the Spitfires.
By the time they got there, it was working its way through. The U.S. got involved in the war. They ran back down to the U.S. and signed up. And he ended up in the Army Air Corps. But anyway, the point is that even my father... I mean, I don't see... anyone I know except that crazy major I ran into shooting people for throwing rocks. So I don't think this is going to work, the troop thing. You know, I just don't think so. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe there's like, I read a figure that less than 1% of the U.S. population is in the military now. And I'm not saying that to call for a draft. A draft is horrible. But I'm just saying, like, that's a fact. And so you could have some real sick people in there. But I think most of them are not. Most of them are, you know, economic refugees, so to speak, in their own right, ending up in the army of all places, which is low pay.
Most of them working class.
Yeah, most of them working class. And they're not going to, they're just not going to, I don't know, just, I'm just not going to shoot women and children, in my opinion. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Unfortunately, we could be dead wrong or could just take one psycho.
Well, I heard the UN's going to be there too. The
oh, yeah.
In blue, so if something happens, I don't know.
I hope there are mass protests for the migrants
and
from
the border.
And there
was a thing on Radio Progressive, Progreso, which is...
what's that? I never heard of it.
You go online, it's a Cuban radio show, Radio Progreso.
Oh, Radio, okay.
Yeah, Radio Progreso.
I thought you said Radio. Radio, yeah,
okay. So it's just radio, only radio.
Got it.
And they were even debating among the table, they call it La Rolanda, you know, the table, La Mesa, where, you know, they were debating amongst each other, you know, should Cuba get involved and take those refugees, you know, take them into political asylum in Cuba?
Interesting.
Would that spark our situation with the troops on the American side?
Wow.
Yes, it would.
Unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Wow. That would be like the go, let's go, you know what I mean? And now that the Russians are there.
I don't know if I believe that, though. They should take them in, you know? That's a good point. I never thought of Cuba.
Because a lot of them want to get to Canada. Mm-hmm. And Cuba has relations with Canada.
Right, right.
And they can say, okay, well, you can go through Cuba as a channel.
But Cuba, you know, a lot of people think it's socialist. It's not really. And, I mean, it is and it isn't. And in either case, it's you don't build socialism in one little island, so it's a pretty poor
country. So they came up with, let's send
in
doctors and help out the caravan.
Yeah, bringing in 1,000 migrants might be problematic, maybe not. I don't know enough about what's happening in Cuba right now.
But I think right now they're going to send doctors to the caravan, you know, in Mexico, because they got relations with Mexico, as a mercy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying you send the troops, that sends a sign, like, well, what's going on? There's a troops coming in from... It'll be like the old Red Dawn scenario there, you know? They're coming in, the Nicaraguans, along with the Cubans. Yeah. You know, have you seen that movie, you know?
Oh, yeah. For those again, international listeners that we have through the internet.
If you grew up in the Cold War in the 80s.
The propaganda right now from Trump, right before the midterm elections we talked about earlier in the show, is it's just right out of the old Cold War propaganda book. And it's they're all coming here to invade and cause crime and spread disease and so on. And
I'd say
there's a lot of crime
already.
ISIS
is with them. I'm like, ISIS is not stupid enough to go with, you know, ISIS, really?
Well, I mean, who said that, by the way? That's pretty,
some
right wing crazy.
Because I hear, you know, I like to hear the right wing, you know, whatever. Some guy who called in the show and said, and it's even possible that the ISIS was part with these, you know, people or infiltrating along with them.
Yeah, well, what's happening is that it's becoming, I think, clearer to a wider number of people that a lot of the refugees are economic refugees. Now, the U.S. government considers that a non-starter. They consider that a irrelevant thing, but that's really what it is, because what we talked about, the United States, the U.S. imperialism and capitalism have impoverished for centuries now, a couple centuries at least, the population in Central and Latin America. So you got to chase money if you're a worker. I do it. Everyone does it. So the money for me that I chase ended up in metropolitan Boston, right? So if I'm down in Honduras, there's not enough jobs, not enough money to chase. I got to go up to metropolitan.
And they treat the Venezuelans different because they say, they're escaping socialist prosecutions. And, you know, so it's different.
Yeah.
So it's like looking at the Cuban who's leaving Cuba because they're just escaping their communist, you know.
Venezuela is never been a socialist country. Chavez and Moreno, the current ruler, they talked about socialism. Chavez made some reforms. Moreno's made some reforms. Reforms don't equal socialism. Socialism is the control of the means of production and distribution in a society. It's an economic system, not like capitalism, but it's an economic system in the sense that capitalism is also an economic system. Is not the same type of economic system. And so, and it's not even a case of like, you know, oh, it's almost socialist or something. They didn't even come close. Chavez and Moreno, especially Chavez with his reputation, they never nationalized, you know, a lot of the economy. They nationalized the oil company, which was ripe for it because it was so horrible and corrupt and everything that it needed nationalization. I mean, any company needs to be nationalized, but this was really obvious. And that's really where it all stems from. The minute Chavez did that, boom. So like what Castro, the minute Castro and the Castro regime nationalized certain important things in Cuba, there was no point of no return. Yeah. You're now our enemy. You're now the capitalist enemy. And if you're a capitalist enemy, you're the U.S. government's enemy. So boom. And so, yeah, people coming from Venezuela now are economic refugees because the economy is not what it was. The level of economic hardship in Venezuela is overstated, but there's high inflation, hyperinflation in some cases. There's the economic sanctions from the U.S. I mean, all these things are contributing to make it a worse situation. I'm not sure there's too many Venezuelans in this caravan, though. I think it's mostly...
No. I'm just saying in general. Venezuelans just come in and fly in, get a visa, and they don't have to go through that.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Because they view Venezuela as the enemy, as the socialist
foe. I understand.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's the same thing with the Cubans telling the Gusanos coming in. Yeah. Oh, we'll let them in, you know, no problem. Mm-hmm. But the minute a Haitian person comes, halt, stop. You ever notice that?
In Cuba? No, I didn't hear about that.
No, in America.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Haiti? No.
Yep.
Cuba? Fine.
Yep.
See the difference?
Yep. Well, the thing I don't have is information about mass rallies in support of the migrants, but as you were kind of alluding to, I bet you there'll be people out there against them, unfortunately. I wonder if it will trigger some sort of movement if they're treated badly, which they will be most likely. Will this energize the immigrant rights movement in the United States, which is dead right now as far as I can see? I'm not sure why. I would imagine it's the way a lot of mass movements go in the U.S. They got subsumed by the Democratic Party. You know, the more that NGO groups and mass movement groups that campaigns around issues, they often end up getting involved with the Democratic Party. And there's an old saying, Democratic Party is where movements go to die, you know, stuff
like
that.
The graveyard of
social movements, that sort of thing. That might be what happened. I don't know. Like, I remember this really interesting... an immigrant rights activist in Worcester who said at a meeting about a union organizing drive said, I'm sick of the Democrats after what they did with DACA. I've had it with them. And I said, well, that's very interesting. Now, we became friends on Facebook, and I don't see through Facebook, I'm not sure if he's keeping to that promise or not, you know? And how many will with all the pressure of lesser evilism and everything. So, what they do to this caravan... could re-energize the immigrant rights movement. I hope it does if they do something bad, or even if they don't, do something good. If they're allowed in, maybe that would have an energizing effect too. But you notice how you get closer to elections in the U.S., most of the time things all get focused on that because of the power of the corporate media, the lack of a workers' party to counteract that or to run its own candidates. It all gets focused on these elections, focused on illusions and capitalist politicians. And you'll notice in this show, we haven't been promoting any politicians. We know of a few Green Party members in Massachusetts that are running statewide that are worth, you know, definitely taking a look at and considering voting for. Voting Democrat, in our opinion, is not going to help. Voting Republican, of course, is not going to help. We understand there's a huge wave of lesser evilism out there because of Trump. But we also understand from experience, a lot of us, that it doesn't... that doesn't translate into any change. In fact, there's a point where if you declare that some party is a reformist party, like a corporate political party like the Democrats, and then never delivers the goods, some people will jump over to the Republican Party, sort of punish them, sort of ping-pong effect. And, of course, that happened with Trump to a certain extent. And that's pathetic, but that's the way it is. And if you set up a duopoly, that's going to happen, you know. And we need to create an alternative, basically a workers' party first, maybe a socialist party at some point. Maybe together they could happen. Socialism is getting very popular. But we need that alternative so bad because that would create alternatives and all sorts of other things. Like, imagine coordinating ballot questions around the country through a workers' party of some sort. Anyway, there is one ballot question we wanted to get more into. It's yes on three, ballot question three, November 6th. In fact, I got a thing from the AFL-CIO saying vote yes on one. Vote yes on two, vote yes on three. Now, I don't have much information about two, but it's basically trying to set up a way to start to overturn that Supreme Court ruling that called corporations people. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, years ago? Definitely. Yeah. Get rid of that.
So yes on two would be a blow against that, would start a process of getting
going
rid of
back
that.
How it was in the 1800s before it got passed.
Yeah, they acted like it.
I think
it
started
no
around
it
Abraham Lincoln or
I don't know. But
there was a time when that was not the case.
Yeah. And also with question one, you know, vote yes on the safe patient staffing limits. What a vote yes to have safe patient safe staffing limits for patients and nurses. Yes on two to start the process of overturning that corporations are people thing. And then yes on three, uphold safety, dignity, and respect for all in Mass. It's a LGBTQ transgender law that is there to uphold already existing law, if I understand it correctly. For the past 2 years, I'm quoting here, Massachusetts has protected transgender people like Ian from, and they have pictures here, of discrimination in public places, including restaurants, stores, and doctor's offices, with no increase in public safety incidents. A yes vote on three, uphold safety, dignity, and respect for all. And then they have various people supporting it. And what the corporate media is doing on this is very similar, actually, on question one, although this one is predicted to pass by a large amount. Question three, they're just lying. So question one says, question three propaganda is like, and if you let this go through, if you vote yes on three, then you'll have men going to women's bathrooms. And there's nothing you can do about it. Stuff like that, kind of that crude propaganda that I associate with the South. That's up here in Massachusetts. Not doing too well, I don't think, which is good. Voting yes on three affirms our current law and lets Ian and live his life without discrimination and other kids. There's a bunch of endorsers, Massey Association, and so on. I think on question three, it's just a civil rights issue, and people understand that pretty clearly. So a no vote, I'm looking at question a yes on three thing. A no vote would repeal this provision of our non-discrimination law and send a message to our transgender neighbors they are not welcome to stay. And the provision is a law guaranteeing transgender people from discrimination. So does that make more sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hope so. So it's like a law to protect a law already in existence. Makes it sound a little more complicated, but I think the response to this is, oh, yeah, I support, you know, transgender rights. I support LGBTQ rights. So boom, put up that sign. I see more yes on three signs in some places than yes on one. Yes on three is a great idea. Yes on three on Election Day, Massachusetts will vote to keep protecting transgender people from discrimination in public places, including restaurants, stores, and doctor's offices. And like with question one, Social Alternative had a couple public meetings, at least in Massachusetts, maybe more than that, at least in Worcester. And we tried to link this question with other concrete demands that would help transgender people in terms of healthcare and housing and so on, funding programs. Try to get through this quick. We're running out of time. Defend and extend transgender protection, equality for all. This is from Socialist Alternative in Worcester. This year, the transgender community is under attack with an incredibly high poverty rate, high unemployment, high life expectancy, being only 20 to 30 years old due to alarming rates of murder and suicide. Now more than ever, we should take a stand against hate and discrimination. Worcester passed an ordinance in 2014. The state passed the Senate Bill 2407-2016. Here we go. This is the one we were just talking about. To explicitly protect transgender people from discrimination and ensure access to public places. It's funny how a lot of Social Alternative stuff we put out is clearer than the official stuff. I'm not saying that to brag. I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I think the official campaigns on sometimes they get too wrapped up in perception. And why don't you just say what it is, you know?
Yeah, anyway, right to the point.
Yeah. These laws barely scratch the surface of oppression the capitalist system imposes on the transgender community. A dramatic change of social views during the queer liberation movement occurred from the 60s to the 80s, where members of the LGBTQ community took to the streets and organized themselves into political and social organizations to agitate, and demand concrete change and acceptance. We need to use those methods of direct action again and garner community support for voting yes on question three to send a clear message to the establishment. We will not tolerate any setbacks in our rights, freedoms, and protections for any and all sections of the working class. Socialist Alternative urges you to vote yes on question three to keep these much-needed protections against discrimination. And there were a couple public meetings. I think one of them had about 40 people at or something, and the other one about 15 or something. modest turnouts, but a lot of people think yes is a slam dunk. It's definitely going to go through. I wish they'd shown up for the education.
So what is this Afraid of Revolution super rich preparing escape bunkers in New Zealand?
We've got almost no time. So let's talk about this to go out with. This is funny. This is from the latest edition of Socialist Alternative's newspaper. It's called Socialist Alternative, October issue. Toya Chester, who is from this area, actually. Toya writes, the headline of her article is, Afraid of Revolution, Super Rich Preparing Escape Bunkers in New Zealand. This was from a corporate media thing, Bloomberg. I saw the same article. Bloomberg recently put out an article that at first glance would almost be mistaken for a prequel to The Walking Dead. The setting is the edge of the earth, an island nation called New Zealand. The year is 2018, right before the disaster. The protagonist is the 1%, the super rich. The plot is that the world is about to be thrown into catastrophe. There will soon be a world war, a natural disaster, maybe even a zombie attack that will kill billions of people. The super wealthy, that 1%, are preparing for their life after by building bunkers in the most peaceful, secluded place on Earth, New Zealand. It's true. And it's not a screenplay. It's actually happening. A small handful of capitalists are buying up land in New Zealand, building underground bunkers. They range in size and price per person. Some of them extremely large, with the ability to house up to 300 people. Some cost $8 million per person. The people building these bunkers know that soon people will be fed up with the inequality, joblessness, and lack of equal distribution of resources. They are preparing for the coming social upheaval by building a place to hide, as well as for looming natural disasters the capitalist system has created. The Kiwi government, that's New Zealand, has tried to prevent these mostly American billionaires from buying up these areas and pushing residents out by creating laws banning foreigners from purchasing land. An exponentially small group of people have accumulated vast amounts of wealth based on savage exploitation, the savage exploitation of capitalism. This creates the very problems they are now running from, etc. So this is a great article. I don't have time to read all of it, but it's not that long. You should read it. Maybe it's online as well, socialistalternative.org. But you know what I'm reminded of as I'm reading that?
Oh, in reality, this wealth could be used to fix those problems, which is true.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Our money.
No, you're right. But you know what I'm thinking of also is The Hobbits, right? When they filmed that movie, The Hobbit, and all of the other ones, yeah. Lord of the Rings,
oh, God.
That's where they filmed it, New Zealand. They built Hobbit villas. You can still see them. They're there if you're a tourist in New Zealand. The other thing I thought of is, so they're building their own little Hobbit shacks or whatever. But the other thing I thought of is that, and the Hobbits live underground too. Hobbits are ready for the zombie apocalypse and everything else. Anyway, no, but what I also thought of was that New Zealand, if you read geography, which I guess the capitalists forgot to do.
That's a long flight, folks, by the way.
No, not that. Yeah, it is, but not that. Guess what? New Zealand has one of the most active volcanoes in the world. Mm-hmm. Some of the most active volcanoes and most active earthquake fault lines in the world. So you could go down there and set up your little bunker, and all of a sudden...
What is that? It's lava. Let's get out of here.
What is that? That's a hole opening up in the center of the earth to build more earth or whatever.
We have a sauna. No, it's getting hotter. Get out.
So, I don't know. Do we play some music out or do we just go out? Should we put a CD in? What did I...
I think you had a...
Yeah, I think
you
I...
You have the Clash?
I put in New Model Army, a song called Great Expectations.
Good.
Let's throw that in there on our way out. Thanks again for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio.
Yep.
Any last words?
Viva la revolución!
Viva la revolución!
And the people and the workers, and just want those migrants to be safe.
And
or refugees, economic refugees to be safe.
And even as you vote on Tuesday, if you're going to, and we do hope people vote. It's a way of participating, but you don't have to vote for where they tell you to. There's a few green candidates out there you should check out. There's vote yes on one, vote yes on two, vote yes on three. You know, and if you can't find anyone to vote for, write in Leon Trotsky or Karl Marx or something. Rosa Luxemburg, Clara Zetkin, you know the drill. Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, anyway.
Lenin.
Mother Jones. and think beyond Election Day. Election is just a snapshot. The real struggle began before and will continue after. Thanks for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio.